Welcome to Tech Heroes for Good podcast. Here we chat with amazing women leaders all across the globe and share their incredible journey, passion, and motivation. We talk about two things that we love the most, technology and sustainability. I'm your host, Saurabh, a sustainability and a climate change advocate, and this is TSFG. Let us begin. Our guest today is Namrata Sandhu, the co-founder and CEO of the carbon accounting platform Vayu. Vayu is an automated platform made specially for retailers to help them calculate and lower their carbon emissions. It recently raised a pre-seed funding of $1.6 million. Nam has over 17 years of international experience building, developing, and implementing sustainability strategies across businesses. Her mantra is a quote from Mahatma Gandhi, "Be the change you want to see in the world." Hi, Nam. Welcome to our show. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me, Saurabh. I'm super excited to be here.
Same here. In fact, I'm more excited than you are. So thank you so much for giving us your time. And I have already informed our audience about your professional journey. Could you please share with us about your personal life? So who Nam is and what does she do?
Thanks. And again, thanks for having me. So I'm basically originally from India. I grew up in Bombay, and I think growing up in a city like Bombay probably massively shaped my life and my career and everything I've done since then. So I think growing up in the 80s and the 90s in Bombay, you saw a lot of poverty. There was kind of, it wasn't a very clean city at the time. It's still not, but it's gotten a lot better over the years. And I think really seeing that firsthand all the time growing up had a huge impact on kind of how I thought about sustainability, how I thought about human rights, and kind of influenced my future and everything that I did. So I basically, after college, decided to focus in on sustainability and was on the KPMG climate change and finance team in 2005 and basically worked in sustainability essentially as the space evolved over the years as a consultant, primarily working with bigger businesses, trying to see how we could kind of integrate sustainability into core business practices. And the space really changed and evolved over time. So it was sometimes focused around human rights, obviously always looking at environment, but looking at kind of inclusive business models and changing the space a lot. I then studied at UCL in London, specifically environment, and looked a lot at climate science and also offsetting and things like that. I then continued for a couple more years as a strategy consultant, helping businesses on sustainability, and then decided I had a really broad experience across all kinds of businesses, but really wanted to focus in on one type of business and really understand and work in-house. So I then started to work at the Arcadia Group in London, which at the time was one of the largest high street retailers in the UK, and kind of focused in on sustainability there and looking at both the manufacturing and the supply chains and the human rights and the factories, but also working on stores and communication. And this was quite early on in 2012. So trying to see how you could communicate sustainability to customers in stores. I then worked and moved from London to Berlin, where I then started to work at Zalando. I first worked on the private label business, again, similarly looking at the manufacturing and the factory side, but at Zalando a lot on kind of material sustainability and how we could move our products and make them more sustainable. I then moved into the Zalando group, where we worked a lot more on the brand level and seeing how we could kind of use the platform to move brands towards becoming more sustainable and help and kind of guide them in their journey. So I did that for a few years, and then basically took a little bit of a career break last year, just in time for the pandemic. So then had a bit of time to reflect on kind of my next steps and what I wanted to do. And I really saw with the pandemic hitting that there was a lot of movement into e-com, and e-commerce has a huge environmental impact. And we kind of saw the growth accelerate really, really quickly. There's, as I said, a big environmental impact. So we said, we really understand that businesses want to do and be better. Can we give them the tools from a carbon side to help them take climate action, basically?
That is really interesting. So as I can see, you were inclined towards sustainability from the beginning. Because many sustainability professionals that I personally know have transitioned from some of the other field like marketing, finance, consulting, and now they are jumping the bandwagon after realizing the importance of sustainability and the whole debate around it. Whereas you, who has been passionate about sustainability from the start, so Tell us what led to this decision. As you've mentioned before, that growing up in Bombay, you've seen poverty, the divide between the poor and the rich, and the environmental degradation. Were those few of the reasons?
Yeah, so I think, as I said, we kind of saw a lot of that in Bombay, and I mean, just saw that we could have a much wider and bigger impact, and there were things that we could do to improve the situation. So my friends and I started an organization, an NGO, when we were, I believe, 13 or 14, and then worked on the first recycling program in Bombay, where we got the first kind of garbage recycling system put in place in the areas in which we lived. And I think we just saw that there was a lot of impact that we could make, and we could come together, and that we knew a lot of people that could have quite significant impact and influence, and that we could really use that and leverage that to make change. And I think, as I said, we were really aware from a young age that we were more privileged in some ways, and that we could use that to then help people and also change the environment in which we lived. And I think, like I said, I think that just kind of shaped the rest of my life and my career, essentially.
Wow, that's amazing. And tell us, how did the journey from Bombay to London start?
Yeah, maybe I missed a step, actually. I also studied in the US and lived there for 5 years. So went there in between. So I studied in the US and then essentially spent a couple more years back in India, where I worked, as I said, as a consultant, and then moved to London to study at UCL, specifically because they have a really strong program in environment.
Okay, now I can see the gap in your journey. So tell us, what made you shift from London to Berlin?
So as I said, I kind of wanted to work in a certain industry and focus in and become really good operationally at understanding kind of the challenges. And I think with sustainability, the better you understand the industry and you really are entrenched in it, that's when you can really start to find solutions. So retail was super interesting to me because it grows and has been growing for a long time. So I think there was significant impact to be made in there. I mean, I was in at Arcadia, which was primarily offline stores, so traditional brick and mortar. And I thought e-com was kind of much more where the business was moving, but where a lot of the environmental impact is as well. So I kind of moved to Berlin specifically to work at Zalando and understand how different e-com businesses worked and what kind of potential there was to think about sustainability differently within e-com.
Interesting. And yeah, absolutely true. I think that is an app sector to begin with, as I believe retail sector is responsible for almost 10% of global emissions, isn't it?
Exactly. It has a significant impact that's also growing. And as I mean, you're probably aware that in the pandemic, e-com itself has grown like 30 to 50%. So the retail industry has also grown significantly, with certain verticals growing much faster than they were anticipated, like homeware and lifestyle and things like that.
Okay, so that was the business part of our conversation. Now let's talk about the challenges that you faced. First of all, as a woman entrepreneur, and secondly, as a woman of color with Indian roots. What were your challenges that you faced? If you can elaborate a little bit on that.
Sure. I think I would maybe identify more with just being an immigrant and not being originally from the country in which I'm setting up the business. And I think that has a huge impact, just from the perspective that the network that you have is completely different. And I think you kind of not necessarily have gone to college or grown up or have those long-term relationships. So the kind of breadth of your network is quite different. So I think you really need to build up a network from scratch, which is pretty significantly different if you grew up somewhere and you know people and you kind of went to certain schools and things like that. So I think it makes it much more challenging from that perspective, because you have to kind of work your way from the ground up, trying to meet people, network, talk to them, and kind of just do a lot more around that to kind of build the network of people you need around you to, one, just set up the company, to fundraise, to do basically everything you need to be able to do.
Interesting. So as you rightly mentioned, that networking is one of the main areas of concern, and especially when you're leaving your country of origin and switching over to another one. So what can you suggest? Are there any platforms, any resources where one can find support through networking or being a part of the startup community? How did you go about it?
So I think with networking, traditional kind of talking to people and having them introduce you to people still works the best. I mean, during the pandemic, I have to say I use Lunch Club quite a bit, and I found it really helpful to meet people, especially because we were all kind of locked up and not going to conferences and not going to places where you would normally see people. So I think that was quite a different situation. So I think Lunch Club and things, there were a lot of apps and tools that did similar things, I think, as well. But I think still no way to kind of bypass the whole, you need to talk to a lot of people to then get them to introduce you to a lot more people in kind of the much more old school traditional way. And I think it's super hard to bypass that. And so I think it just makes what you need to do like 10x harder and take much more effort than if you already had that available.
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more, because coming from India, I also have the similar experience. And I believe the traditional way of approaching people and getting in touch with them still works out the best. So great. So now let me ask you, for someone like you who has started from bottom up, what value do you think Berlin has provided you? And how do you think that Berlin Yes. startup ecosystem has helped you?
Yeah, so I think Berlin has changed a lot over the last few years, and the startup ecosystem has become really strong. And I think that played a really big role. So we were part, maybe I should have mentioned earlier as well, as part of the Silicon Alley Berlin Founders Fund. That really helped us a lot. And they've been like a great network and a great group of people to kind of support diverse founders, to support women, to really help us kind of network in. So that was really helpful. So I think starting to see organizations like that come up in Berlin has been super helpful. And I think you're really starting to see the ecosystem mature. And I think it's become super international, which means I think the kind of appetite for people from different backgrounds and diversity and things like that has changed a lot over the last few years. And I hope over the next few years, we'll also see significant changes, because we're also starting to know about more founders from diverse backgrounds, women starting to get funded as well, which I think is pretty new, especially in Berlin.
And right, talking about internationalization, being a Berlin-based startup, is there any scope of VIU's internationalization? Is it on the cards?
Yeah, so we basically consider ourselves as a software company completely international from the start. So we're able to service clients all over the world right away. So we have a significant portion of our customers across Europe, but also some in the US and some reaching out to us from Latin America, from Asia. So we're able to actually service people across the world. And that's the exact idea. We're not kind of limited because we're building software to any geographic location specifically.
That's really great. So the reason why I wanted to ask you this question was because I think it is a well-known fact in the climate science community that the impact of climate change will be way more detrimental in the global south vis-a-vis in the north. As recently, we all have been witnessing the cataclysmic events, be it in the form of Western European floods, Canadian heat dome, Californian and Australian wildfires. But of course, how climate change is perceived in Southeast Asia or any other global south country is way different. So do you think the solution that you're providing, could it be beneficial for Asian retail sector? Or do you think in the future, will it be impactful, or whether it can scale up?
You mean in terms of moving to Asia and other markets that are maybe less developed with regards to sustainability?
Yes, exactly. That's what I meant.
Yeah. So I think the markets are surprising in some ways, because I think the customer appetite for it is actually quite high, even in Asian countries. And you're starting to see that, because we get a lot of people approaching us from other countries that you normally wouldn't expect to be that advanced. And I think a lot of what sustainability has done is it's driven consumers to ask for more, to demand more, to want to see more from brands. And that's kind of pushed brands and businesses. And we've seen it on kind of the policy and government side as well, where people have felt the pressure to act, to take steps. And I think we've just seen the power of the consumer just being really, really strong. And I think in Asia, we're starting to see that happen. And likewise in Latin America, we see it a lot in Brazil and Mexico and countries like that as well. So I think you're starting to see the customers ask for more, and therefore brands looking for solutions, because they know their customers demand it. So they kind of want to be able to do that as well. And I think generally the point of view we come from is brands want to do better. They just miss the opportunity and the tools that help them understand what better looks like. And that's exactly the gap we're trying to fill.
And yeah, I'm sure VIU will do a great job in filling those gaps. So I think in that regard, tracking becomes one of the main components to get that data. of course, it is of critical value to you. So what is the kind of data that you're trying to collect through different point of sale system?
Yeah, so we basically collect the accurate data out of the point of sale systems. And then the idea and the tracking and the calculation is, one, we can make the calculations really accurate. But most importantly, what accurate calculations do and allow is reductions and optimization. Because you first need really, really good quality data to then be able to understand what is the impact of changes you make. And you need super high quality data to be able to do that. So for us, what we're really trying to do is help businesses reduce their impact and understand what the impact of the decisions they make is. So if you changed a box, or if you changed the color of a dye, or you change a shipping provider, you need to understand what impact that will have on the carbon. And that's the data we want to make completely visible to customers.
Okay, so talking about data, according to one of your tweets from November 2020, you have mentioned, and I quote, "We are not tracking anywhere near where we need to." So what did you mean by that? And how do you think we can take it to an optimal level?
So, I mean, I think there's been a lot of data that's come out on the fact that we're not close to tracking to the 1.5 degree target that we need to meet by 2030. And I think that's even come out on the policy level. I think there was some German government policy that came out that talked about that a lot in detail. So I think generally there's global consensus on the fact that we need to meet the 1.5 degree target, but nothing we're doing is helping us reach that or track that. So what we do essentially with Value is we also help retailers track against the 1.5 degree target and understand what measures they can or should be taking to start to be able to track themselves against that. And I think that's really important, because what we need is everyone to be tracking against the targets, and every business, every government, and everyone to be taking steps. And until you understand that you're tracking, what numbers look like, you can't really understand the impact that you're having. So I think for us, at least in the retail and e-com sector specifically, we want to give retailers the tools to help meet the 2030 targets.
Yeah, because I believe brands are also becoming aware about their image in the market, plus legislation also puts massive pressure on them. But I also believe that every resource spent towards sustainability should be seen as a mitigation strategy rather than a mere compliance adherence, yes. Right? So at times, and I think it also leads towards greenwashing. So what do you think about it?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of legislation, at least the governments are starting to play roles. And I think the UK is coming out with legislation on kind of green claims and things like that. So you're starting to also see policy follow in that space and kind of identify that that's a problem and something that needs solving as well.
Definitely. And I absolutely agree with that. Great. Okay. So this was about the hardcore business topics. And yeah, let's talk about you as a person now. So what keeps you motivated? And what keeps you awake at night? Or what do you think, how are you going to leave your legacy?
So for me, I think I'm less concerned about legacy and more concerned about the fact that, well, one, I've worked in sustainability my whole life and career. So for me, what motivates me is obviously the fact that I think fundamentally human beings can change. We can all be better and we can all do better. And there's different ways that looks like. And with Value, what we're trying to do is give people the tools to be able to take that action. So that kind of is what motivates me. And I have to say, we've had an amazing response from brands, and that keeps me super excited about what we're building, because there's serious enthusiasm from them. So that absolutely motivates me. What keeps me up at night is really how we meet the targets we need to meet by 2030. I mean, I studied climate science in 2009, and we kind of have exceeded any of the projections we had for 2020 already. So for me, it's kind of scary where we've come to and where we will get to by 2030 if we don't do more. And I think that's what keeps me up at night, is, are we all doing enough? And is enough even good enough to stop us from getting to where we will by 2030 if we don't do more?
Absolutely. We definitely need to do more. But the good thing is there is lots of discussion and awareness amongst individuals, businesses, governments, and also in the mainstream media, that whatever is happening around us, we are right at the edge of smashing the planetary boundaries. Yeah. But then there are lots of climate change deniers also, right? Which makes me feel a little hopeless at times. But then I realize there is a need to educate people, and there is a need to educate businesses about it. And of course, work towards a broader policy change. And this is where policy change comes into the picture. So do you think that we are on the right track when it comes to climate policy formulation?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think policy, if there's policy in place and there's targets and there's kind of rules of the game for people to follow, it just makes everything much easier. So I think corporate sustainability reporting, the extended legislation is due to come through in the European Union in the next couple of years. And I think as that policy comes through, it kind of forces business to do more, to take more action. So absolutely, I'm a big supporter of the fact that policy can really support and move the needle, because then it just sets up the rules of the game.
That's really commendable. So as we're approaching towards the end of our discussion, do you have any message that you would like to give to our audience, especially to our young women entrepreneurs?
I mean, my only message would be, don't take no for an answer and keep at it and keep trying, and you'll always get there in the end.
That's true. That is so true. Okay, so thank you so much for taking our time and sharing your journey with us, Nam. It was a delight talking to you and knowing about your journey. And congratulations again to you and the whole team at VIU on securing the pre-seed funding of $1.6 million. That is such a great job. All the best with that. And again, thank you for being a Shiro and the kind of amazing work that you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me, Saurabh, and also for giving me an opportunity to share with you. This has been awesome.